Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Okay, here we go. All set in the room? The room? Okay, thumbs up? Yep. Yeah, I'm ready to go. Raring to go today. For episode 149, put it in the books, 149er. And what else? Yes, levels look good. Mike's hot. Okay, ready? Here we go. Three S's, Jim. Star, smile, strong. Ready? Here we go. Three, two, one. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. Thank you for downloading, scrolling, clicking, whatever it is you do to find us on a regular basis, your efforts and loyalty are much appreciated. Don't forget, also have a landing page if you want to hear any of the previous podcasts of this program. Go to WGNplus.com, go to the entertainment section, hit Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic prompt, and there you will find all previous 148 episodes. Or will you? Terms of episode 109. But they're all there except for today's, which then must make this one episode 149. 149er. We're taking off, putting this bird in the air on a 149er. So welcome. One thing that I hope on a weekly basis, or however you listen to the podcast, ideally, as I've said many times, the goal here is to create an ongoing dialogue between me and you. And so hopefully you do listen on a regular weekly basis, because as I've said many times, I will refer to previous podcasts or recent ones. And so if you are up to date, it certainly makes it a little easier for you to keep up. On the other side of the coin, you know, this is not rocket science. I think you can figure it out. And I sometimes do give a little backstory for those who have not been around forever. It's kind of interesting to note that here we are in March, and I believe the first podcast appeared, I know it appeared in May. I remember the date, I believe I recorded it. I'd have to look back in my day planner from 2016 to see when I but actually was on the website. Or maybe if I actually went on the, hey, maybe I should go on my landing page. I don't know if the date is actually there. I have to look. But we are approaching the third anniversary of the podcast, which is pretty crazy from my standpoint. It's gone by very quickly, and I have enjoyed doing it. Of course, it's a whole new frontier, and in those 3 years, the growth of the podcast has certainly increased, and the popularity of the podcast has certainly increased, and I know that many younger folks, that's all they do, is listen to different podcasts. And so, I really don't have any, direct data of how many people listen to this on a weekly or regular basis, but I do know at least from WGN Plus website that it does pretty well. And it's consistently one of the more popular ones on the website. So that's good to know. And I am enjoying it, and I'm certainly glad that that you are too. And I certainly hear from a group of people that consistently will comment about the podcast on my Facebook page. And that is always available for you to do so. And it's kind of neat to tell, I could tell when people are listening, because they will have a question and I will certainly respond. As I said, the Facebook page is simply Jim Toronto, T-U-R-A-N-O. I think it also comes up under Elton Jim Toronto. So if you listen to the podcast and you're a fan, it's posted up. The link is posted on my Facebook page every Monday as well when it is available, or you can certainly go on to WGNplus.com. And it's available in other places too. I think it's available on iTunes and other podcast outlets and platforms. So thank you very much, and we're having fun. But yeah, we're at episode 149 and almost the three-year period, which makes sense because, you know, 152 weeks in a year would be 156 podcasts. And I have missed only a couple. So, you know, we're getting pretty close. It could be, you know, as I said, early May is when we first started. I only missed a couple of weeks, I think. But not even that. I don't know. I'd have to go back and check my official list. But anyway, yeah, almost 3 years. So if you've been around with me since the beginning, back in 2016, as I said, your loyalty and your listening habits are certainly well appreciated. And I think part of, hopefully, the appeal of this podcast on a regular basis is that you will and do hear things that you don't hear many other places. And certainly, I touch upon topics that are in the news. But my style of radio, I hope, and broadcasting has always been about making it creative and unique and something out of the ordinary. Finding the out of the ordinary in the ordinary, if you will. And making some my own observations or some of my own held opinions that, frankly, you can't find anywhere else. A lot of podcasts are always filled with interviews with people and things like that. And that's fine. And I have done that in the past. But I do find that even in a radio situation, if I'm going to interview somebody, I really want it to be a special interview and something that you cannot find everywhere else. Because a lot of times you will just find the same interviews by the same people in a lot of different places. And that's fine. But I try to make it something different, even when I'm on the radio. And as I've said, my goal is to find interesting things that you can't find anywhere else. And part of that is just my observation. One of my credos is it's not what you talk about, it's how you talk about it. And the how is what makes each person individual. We can all talk about the same topics, but hopefully what keeps people coming back here is, boy, I'd like to see what Jim's going to say about that. That's the goal, you know. Hopefully you, in the back of your head as you're scrolling through the different podcasts, oh, well, this looks interesting. What I wonder what he's got to say about that. So it might even be a very generalized topic or a big topic in the news. And the question is, knowing Jim and the kind of perspectives or opinions he has, I'd love to hear what he's going to say on that. And sometimes it is a very well-known topic, and sometimes I guarantee you it's a topic that no one will ever talk about except right here. And this may be one of those quirky podcast topics. I hope it is, because as I said, these are things that just kind of I notice and bug me. And here's an outlet to share those with you and see if they also appeal to you or ring a bell or turn your ear and say, I never thought of that, but wow, that's interesting. So let me give you a little backstory on today's topic, because it just came to me in a very natural way. No great Ten Commandments kind of partings of the Red Sea here. No big clout. Let my people go. I am the Lord thy God. I'm looking forward to the Ten Commandments. One of my favorite movies of all time also comes on every spring right before Easter. So looking forward to that, but we can talk about that later. So yeah, no great revelations, just an interesting observation that I would like to share with you. So one of the stations that I watch on a regular basis on my satellite service, satellite dish, is a network called Buzzer, B-U-Z-Z-R, or it might just be B-U-Z-Z-E-R. It is on my, I have the Dish satellite network. It's on there. And I also believe it is on the air, over the air. If you just had a regular antenna on a TV, Buzzer is on that station, is over the air as well. I'm not sure who runs it. I'm not sure who owns it. But what I love about it is 24 hours of old game shows. And it runs the gamut from game shows, some vintage ones in black and white from the early 60s or mid 60s. Up through the 70s, what was kind of the zenith of game shows, and then even into the 80s and even a little into the 90s. And then game shows went away with the popularity of two things in the 90s. The popularity of the daytime or morning or afternoon talk show, which, my gosh, for a while everyone had a talk show. Right? Geraldo, it was obviously Oprah, but Oprah, Jerry Springer, Sally Jesse Raphael, Maury Povich is still around. Everyone, Ricky Lake, you name it, someone had one. So that took up the daytime programming that used to be occupied by the game show in the 70s and 80s. And then also, obviously, reality TV and other kind of shows like that. Or the extension of news programs into the morning hour. So game shows and soap operas have really been victim to the rise in either the expansion of news on many network stations, newscasts that run into the 10 or 11 o'clock hour central time, and the rise of the daytime or early morning or afternoon talk show, or even the other little shows that are not so little, like People's Court, where you had Judge Wapner, and now you have Judge Judy, and there's a million of these judging shows as well. So the game show, which was a staple in the 60s and 70s and a little into the 80s, then began to fade definitely in the late 80s and early 90s. Now, it's come back to some extent in the primetime world, especially ABC has brought back now some new versions of the old shows, like Match Game with Alec Baldwin and $10,000 Pyramid, which has upped its stakes, I think, and other things like that. Obviously, Family Feud has remained a staple, and Wheel of Fortune has remained, but a lot of them have gone by the wayside. And we've seen that a lot of the game shows that came back initially because of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire with Regis Philbin, and that became a phenomenon. And even for a while, Deal or No Deal, which has now come back with Howie Mandel, was certainly popular. So the game show has never completely gone away, but it has shifted from daytime to more nighttime. And so what is interesting to watch this Buzzer channel, and there is a game show channel as well, But I watch Buzzer because they do a lot of marathon. They do like big blocks. They'll have 5 or 6 hours of match game. 2 or 3 hours of classic concentration with Alex Trebek from the 80s or, you know, Card Sharks from the 80s and Supermarket Sweep from the 90s and Pressure Luck with Peter Tamarkin. No whammies from, excuse me, my voice is a little rough, from the 80s. So it runs the gamut. And so I really enjoy watching that station because some of these game shows were on when they were on in their heyday. They were on in the afternoon and in the early to mid-70s or late-70s, and I was either in school. Match Game was on at 2:30 in the afternoon, you know, and Tattletales with Bert Convy and Password Plus with Alan Ludden, which came on back in the late-70s, and the original Password with Alan Ludden. I love old TV shows and old music and nostalgic things anyway, so this is right in my wheelhouse. So it's a station that I watch regularly. So a big part of the game show, in general, of course, is always clapping, right? Everybody's clapping on game shows. The contestants are clapping. The audience is clapping. The host is clapping. Some of the shows, like Price is Right, everybody's clapping. I mean, it's just one big clap fest. But, you know, the whole goal of the game show is to, for the audience at home to live vicariously through the contestants and play along at home. And it's always high level. I mean, high energy, high level energy. They always want people jumping up and down. Now, once again, Match Game started in 1973, although the original Match Game started in the 60s with Gene Rayburn. And it was a much different show. The basic concept was the same of celebrities filling in a blank, but the way the game was played was a little different. And, you know, the classic Match Game 73, which ran up until the early 80s with Gene Rayburn and even had a nighttime version. That's how popular that show was. It was on, you know, 5 days a week in the afternoon. Then it was on in the evening a couple of nights a week. And then, because it remained popular, and as the game show was holding on for dear life, for its survival, there was even a version of a combination of the Hollywood Squares, which was hosted by Peter Marshall, which is another very popular game show, which sadly you don't see a lot of those reruns because a lot of those were erased and those shows are lost forever, which is a shame because it was really a great, funny show, game show. But there was even for about a year, a combination hour-long show of Match Game and Hollywood Squares. They combined the two. And Gene Rayburn came back for that. I'm sure Gene Rayburn made a nice little buck off of Match Game for a good 10-year run, if not more. And I'm sure he did very well. Because at one time, Match Game 73, 74, 75, 76, 77, 78, 79, 80, you know, though that was the number one game show on television. And people loved it. And once again, it does very well now with Alec Baldwin. I don't like the new version as well. There was an innocence as well as a little risque edge to Match Game. The one in the 70s that made it different. Most game shows were very straightforward, non-controversial. It was, you know, kind of very conservative. And Match Game had a little edge to it, which gave it a little interesting pump and push. The questions were written in such a way where they could have double entendres and and sort of have a sexual meaning, but you couldn't go there. It was the first place, I think, on television that used the words boobs and tinkle on a regular basis. But it was always, and Gene Rayburn did a good job, and of course they had the regular stars that were on there, the six celebrities that the contestants matched with, and there was the three regulars on Match Game for many years, of course, was Brett Summers, who was married to Jack Klugman from The Odd Couple, Charles Nelson Reilly, which is where my occasional comes from, that's a tribute to Charles, and Richard Dawson. And Betty White was also on a lot, as well was a 70s actress named Joyce Boulafont, who was every so often popped up on Mary Tyler Moore's show as Murray Slaughter's wife. And another actress named Patty Deutsch, who had red hair and sort of had this nasal voice, and she was always on. But it was a very popular show, and it now is very popular, as I said, not only on ABC with Alec Baldwin. The other thing I don't like about the Match Game new version is that they have taken the risque part of Match Game in the 70s and just exploited it and taken it overboard. As I said, in the 70s, things and television was still somewhat conservative. So Match Game was pushing the boundaries, but in a very gentle, innocently risque way. And there were even stories now that, you know, they when they film these game shows, they film them like five in a day. They can do like 6 months worth of shows in a couple of weeks. They're not on every day. They don't do those shows live. They, in 2 or 3 weeks, they could bang out, or a month, they could bang out a whole season. So there's sometimes five shows a day, which explains why a lot of times the contestants, when they come back on the next show, have the same clothes on. The celebrities would always change. They had all their different outfits on, but many times the contestants would come back for the next day, and they'd have the same clothes they had on the day before. And then you could always tell when the filming day was over, because then if the contestants did change clothes, you'd know that they went home and came back the next day. Little tidbit there. But so it's become in some books about this, it's kind of been revealed that, especially on Match Game, you know, there would be a lunch break and dinner break, because it was a long day of filming. Even a half-hour show many times takes more than an hour to tape, with all the stops and edits, and sometimes there's things that happen and they have to start over. And so apparently it sounds as if the Match Game celebrities, after a while, especially after lunch, would sit down and have a drink. Don't forget, this is the 70s. And smoking and drinking just flowed. There was no stigma to it at all. And so you can always sometimes tell when you watch, especially when you watch Match Game, that when that show was taped during the day, the celebrities are a little looser and a little gigglier and a little sillier. And it's obvious. Well, the only problem is that's what sort of made the show interesting and fun too, because you knew there was something else going on, and the show was being played on some different levels, you know, not just the game that was being played. There was some other inside jokes, and as I said, these people are a little tipsy. And but now they exploit that, you know, now they have they encourage the celebrities on the new Match Game with Alec Baldwin to be drinking. You see them drinking drinks on the air. You could see they're getting drunk, and they want them to act silly, and they want them to say outrageous things, and they actually bleep them. The celebrities now are actually using swear words and vulgar terms. And so they're either cuckoo, they're bleeped out, or their actual answers are pixelated out. And to me, that loses the innocent charm of the what the original show was. That when the celebrities were tipsy or drunk, that wasn't done on purpose. That was natural, and that and so the craziness that occurred was a natural occurrence out of that. Now they want that. They encourage that. They showcase that. And it feels a little forced and fake to me. And so I've watched it if there's really nothing else on, even though I love the concept of Match Game. But I certainly don't enjoy it as much as the original version. I think if they just would play it straight and then have these little things happen by accident, that's the fun. The accidents is what is entertaining. And if you try to script an accident, it doesn't work, right? It's not an accident. But so to get back to my point here, as I love to digress, but also along the way, give you a little insights. So I watch this buzzer channel on a regular basis. Sometimes on a Saturday afternoon, if we're not doing anything, I mean, I'll put it on at 11 o'clock in the morning, 10:30, I think, and it goes to sometimes 3 in the afternoon, and just boom. It's background noise. If we're doing something, it'll just be background noise. If we're reading or we're doing some thing around the house, cleaning or doing some project, it'll just be background noise. It'll almost be like a radio. And sometimes we'll watch 2 or 3 episodes in a row too. So, as I said before, clapping has always been a part of the game show. The production of the game show going back to its beginnings in the 50s and certainly in the 60s, the audience clapping and rooting and living vicariously through the contestants getting excited and having a lot of energy with the prizes and the answers. And like I said, now today when you watch Price is Right, it's almost like a riot in there. And they encourage that. And that's the kind of world we're in. We're in a bigger, louder, look-at-me world. So everybody's jumping and trying to make themselves seen and known on television, where when you watch these reruns from the 70s, you'll see how the average person was very intimidated by a camera and very shy and very reserved, and very few people put themselves out to be seen or heard. Everybody was much more reserved. It's really a sociological study when you watch these things from 40 years ago. Some of these Match Game shows and things like that are, you know, and there's this classic concentration with Alex Trebek, as I said, that is from the mid-70s or mid-80s. Even that show is 30 years old. And it's so interesting to see how the average person's demeanor has changed today. I mean, everybody is just, you know, look at me. Back then, it was people were blushing if the camera was on them. And that's why, and their celebrities really were the celebrities. Now, everybody's a celebrity, or so they think they are. So it's really an interesting kind of throwback as well to see the way people acted. And even what would be considered risque back then is nothing compared to today. But back to clapping. So, as I watch these shows on a regular basis, it started to just through regular viewing, I started to notice how different, and because I am somewhat opinionated, in my view, how wrong some people clap. Now, clapping is one of the most basic communication devices that human beings have. Long before the iPhone, long before the telephone, long before Morse code, long before the internet, long before the television, long before the radio, long before anything of communicating between people, which is really what all those outlets are. It's a means of communication. dating back to, I would assume, the caveman, right? We have to give the caveman a lot of credit for coming up with things, either credit or blame, right? But I assume that the caveman and the early man had to find a way to communicate, to either get someone's attention. You know, there were no sound effects machines. There were no doorbells. There were no apps with sounds on them. There were no alarm clocks. So I would think the clap, and not the... not the venereal disease, but the actual hand clapping. The clap, the venereal disease may be around just as long as the hand clapping, too, when I think about it now. But that's another subject. Yeah, please, as I continue this conversation, when I say the clap, I'm talking about this clap, okay? Just so we're on the same page. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I haven't done any studies on this or any big research, but I would assume that the clap was, clapping was a way for early man to get someone's attention, to wake them up, to get them going, to get their attention. And obviously, hand clapping, I'll start to use that phrase because I keep saying the clap. It just sounds a little... double entendre, which is not meant. Hand clapping, ultimately now, then somehow, in our evolution, became a sign of approval, right? What's the best way that you can tell someone that you like what they're doing or that you are happy or there is a positive thing is you clap for yourself, you clap for others, you clap for a movie. You clap at a play, you clap at anything that you think is of high quality, that is good. We still clap to get people's attention, but for the most time, the hand clap now is our physical sign of approval. And so the clap, the hand clap... has been a fixture on game shows and television shows and audience shows. Anytime there's an audience on television, everybody's clapping, right? I mean, we just clap everywhere. You go to a play, you go to a film, you go to see a speech, wherever. We're always clapping. And so you would think that since we clap on a regular basis, that we would all know how to do it correctly. But as I've been watching the Buzzer Network and all these game shows, I've noticed that there are many different kinds of claps, of hand claps. And to me, there's only one correct one. And now that I notice it, it drives me crazy. And I am now spreading my neuroses to you. At the end of the day, I hope that now after today's podcast, after you listen to this, I hope you will begin to notice, whether you're watching television or you're at a play or a movie or you're at a concert or wherever you're at, if I've done my job today, when we're done here with episode 149, you will never look or never take clapping for granted again. And that's my goal. And how many podcasts do that for you? So, because I've noticed there's several ways that people clap, and they're not getting the true... I guess the word is they're not getting their claps worth. there's a new word I think I've just coined that may be in the Urban Dictionary soon. But when you clap, you should be getting your claps worth, right? The I've seen people on these game shows, especially, this is where I first noticed it. They're not getting the most out of their hand clap, right? The idea is to make a very strong and consistent sound. Now, I have seen people, and the best part of this is you can do this with me right now, wherever you're at. If you're at home, it's great because no one's going to see you. Even if you're on a bus or a subway train, or maybe you're just walking down the street listening to this, you could still do this. Maybe not as loud, but you could still do it. But if you do it in the privacy of your own home, it might be easier. But that's the great thing about talking about hand clapping. I think you can do this anywhere. A little experiment. Right now, clap. Just clap. Don't think about clapping. Just how do you clap? Do it. Okay. Did you notice where your hands were? Without thinking, your instinctual clap, your instinctual hand clap, what was it like? While you're doing it, do it again and stop yourself. Right after your hands hit, stop. Look at your hands. What configuration are they in? I have seen people who, when they clap, see how wimpy that sounds? That's the clap that I'm doing right there, is the open hand, flat, almost bookending, finger to finger, palm to palm, straight up. You see, you're not getting any power there. You're not really getting any good sound. It's kind of muted, right? But some people do the hand-to-hand, almost a bookended clap, I will call it, with the palm flat and open, and they just hit finger-to-finger and fleshy part of the palm on the top and bottom. And if you'll see, if you put your hands together, it's almost like you're praying. You know what you put when you put your hands together, not folding your fingers, but having your fingers up against each other. So I would call that the praying clap. The praying clap doesn't give you a good sound at all. But when I'm watching these game shows, I see a lot of people do the praying clap, and they do it very quickly too. It's like this manic clap. And it's not getting you a good sound, which is maybe why, and they realize that, and that's why they're doing it fast, because they're realizing they're not getting a good bellowing sound out of their clap. And so they do it in this quick staccato manner in order to maybe generate some noise. The praying hand clap, as I have now dubbed it, doesn't do the job. And a lot of people do that one. Another clap, once again, don't think about it. Clap your hands and stop. Another one that I've noticed, and hopefully by now you're seeing what kind of pattern you're falling into. Do you have the praying hand clap? Okay, if not, clap again. Don't think about it. Just clap. Stop. Keep your hands where they are. Sometimes people will do the uneven hand clap. The praying clap, hand clap, as I said, really does not utilize the middle of the palm. It's the fleshy part at the top, just under the fingers, and the fleshy part under your palm. But there's almost a gap in there where air almost comes out. And that's why you get this, hear that weird kind of wah, wah sound? That's not a clap. It's not a good clap. Some people, to perhaps get a little of their palm involved in the clap. We'll do the uneven method. As I said, you have the praying hand clap where each finger is lined up and you slap them together. And I would basically say that's a slap clap. So I've just created another new name, which I just thought of right now. Either the praying clap or the slap clap. But it's weak. It's wimpy. Not a good clap. What I have noticed that some people, when they clap, some people, when they clap, they hit, their hands are uneven. Instead of the finger to finger, lining them up like you're praying, one hand will hit the palm of the other hand. Once again, hands flat out, like you're doing patty cake. And one hand will hit the palm. And you hear that. Now that's a little better, right? That sound is better than that one. You can hear there's more volume and more power behind the uneven clap than the slap clap. Wimpy. But still, you're not getting and you're not using the full potential and the full power of your hands when you're clapping, when you're doing that. It's still a little wimpy. So the uneven clap, while better than the slap clap, while better than the praying clap, is still, to me, a little wimpy. Now, I'm not judging this by gender because, of course, in today's world, we can't point anything out according to gender. But I do notice that on these game shows, at least in the 70s and 80s and 90s, because a lot of the contestants are women on game shows, that a lot of women do either the slap clap, the frantic slap clap, the frantic praying hands clap, which to me is just totally wrong, or some others will do the uneven hand clap, where one hand, still flat, is hitting the middle of the palm. Now, we also know that in high society, yes, lovey, you know the Thurston Hall III. You know, some people, a clap is not, you know, in some circles, the clap is not supposed to be a loud and boisterous kind of gesture. It might be there for to show approval, and it might be there to convey a sense of recognition, but in more proper and polite circles, you know, the clap is just there as an obligatory kind of thing, that the idea is not to make a lot of noise and not to make a big gesture. It is there as a polite and dignified gesture, but not one to necessarily make big noises. And we've seen that, you know, people will be at an opera, for instance, and they will have, or at some elegant event, and women especially, not so much today, but certainly many years ago, would have white gloves on, and they would simply, once again, hands open, flat, patty cake hands, if you will, and they would simply have almost create a right angle, and they would just tap fingers. There's no palms involved. and you'd get, okay, there's nothing there at all, right? I mean, that's, but that wasn't the point. The point was to show your approval, but not to make it be loud or obnoxious or even bring attention to yourself. Because once again, there was a time in the proper mannered cultured society when you did not bring attention to yourself. You were more dignified. You did not make a spectacle. And so you did show your approval, but you certainly didn't make yourself seen or known. And so there was the kind of finger clap, which is polite and elegant, but certainly you are not, you're not getting your clap's worth, once again, at all. In today's world, we are big and loud and look at me. And so the, I don't even know if the dignified clap is even around anymore. Or if the dignified clap is around, it's done as a throwaway, obligatory. Yeah, I'll clap, but whatever. I'll give you a few little nods of recognition, but I'm not really crazy about it. At one time, that was the clap of approval in high society. But now in today's big, loud, look at me society, you know, that's almost like, I'll give you a couple of claps, but no big deal. So I am by no means a clapping expert. I have not done any extensive research on the different types of claps. And there may be some more that I'm even forgetting now. I'm just sort of going off the top of my head of the claps that I have observed. Now, of course, the biggest one is at a concert where you see the giant arm clap, right? That is sort of come back in the rap and hip hop world, but the giant hand clap. And if there's ever a great example of the giant arm clap, it is now become famous for all to see in the new film, Bohemian Rhapsody, of Queen's historic performance at Live Aid, when the entire audience was clapping along with Freddie Mercury to Lady, or to Radio, not Lady. That's where she supposedly got her name from, that song, though. Radio Gaga. All we hear is Radio Gaga, Radio Goo Goo, Radio Gaga. And that's the arm clap. So that's not even just a hand thing. That's really the big gesture for the big event, for the big reaction. And if you ever watch the original, go on Google and just hit, you know, Live Aid, Queen, and you'll see Wembley Stadium. At that point, probably 60, 70,000 people all doing that hand clap with the arms. Something, it's a sight to see, and they did recreate it in the film. But once again, you know, that is more of a huge, big gesture than it is focused on the sound of the clap. It's more of the gesture of the clap. We're all doing this so everybody can be seen. I mean, the big hand clap at a concert is there because most people are far away from the stage, and so they're using their entire upper body to be seen, right? Almost like the wave. So, and that's flat-handed again. It's kind of the praying clap, only over your head and using your arms as opposed to just your hands. And that could be a fun clap, and that could be but that's a party clap. That's a communal clap. You know, that's a clap that is not really based on individual, but on a group. We do the hand clap, the big giant arm hand clap, mostly when we are in a big group as a form of unity. Yes, folks. I can't believe that I'm getting this far into clapping as well. So believe me, we're all on the same page on this. But this is why you listen, right? I hope. So you say, Jim, you have been talking now about clapping for a while, and you're telling us about all these different kinds of claps, and you're even trying to do an experiment with us on our own to see which kind of clap we do. And you're telling us all the wrong claps that you have witnessed. Is there a right way to clap, Jim? At least according to you? Oh, dear podcast listener, of course. If you know me, you know there's a right way to do it. And if you know me, you know that I do it the correct way. Yes, fans. Yes, there is, in my view, a correct way to clap that gives you optimum sound, that does not, you know, when you do this open hand thing too, you know, the first one I described, you know, it hurts to do that a lot because you're slapping your fingers together and there's really not a lot of cushion. And so your finger, right now, my hands, after doing all these different claps, are red. So I could tell where the clapping sounds, where the heavy work is being done. Clapping should not be a painful exercise. If it is for you, you're doing it wrong. So yes, faithful podcast listeners, I will now explain and reveal to you what I believe is the correct way to clap. Do it again, right now. Don't think. Clap, real quick. Go, clap, stop. Where are your hands? If you've already done it and your hands were together, you know you've did the clapping. You know you've either done the praying clap or you've done the uneven clap. As I look at my hands right now, my hands are in the handshake position, meaning I am shaking hands with myself in that one hand, for instance, my right hand, I'm right-handed. My right hand is covering the palm of my left hand, and it is the four fingers are closed around the area between my thumb and my index finger on my left hand, and my other four fingers on my left hand are clutching the other side of my right hand over my pinky on my right hand and the side of my hand. And my two thumbs are kind of creating a right angle. That is how you clap, gang. You clap with one hand hitting your palm. Did you hear the strength and sound of that clap? Now that is a clap. It's not this. Wimpy. It's not this. Sort of getting there with the uneven clap. It's not this, which is the over the head clap. Sometimes you miss your hand. Sometimes when you do the over the head clap, you even miss your arms. You miss your hands. Right? If you see people do that because their attention is ahead and they just think that their arms are the same and they'll even miss. That's a horrible clap. As I said, that's more of a communal clap. But if you want to clap correctly, if you want to make a noise, if you want to show your approval, if you want to make your clap count, the best way, the only way to clap is palm in palm.
your fingers going into the palm, your four fingers together hitting the entire middle of your other hand, the entire palm, the part between your thumb and your index finger. You're hitting the fleshy bottom part of your one hand on the side of your other hand where that's also fleshy. You are getting so much skin contact. There are so many areas of skin contact here. And as I said, fleshy parts that can take the pressure and can create that sound. It's the handshake. It's like you're shaking hands with yourself. You know when you put your hand, you know when you put your hands together over your head, like I just won, and you sort of do the hand in hand thing, and you put your hands over your head like in victory. That's it. Take your right hand. If you're left-handed, maybe you do it the other way. Cup your hand. Cup your left hand, and it's the cupping and the hitting of the entire middle, your palm, and even the first lower rung of your fingers, and the fleshy part below your thumb, and the side of your hand. And you're getting so much contact, direct skin contact, that you're getting a great sound. Now that's a clap. And you're even getting, you remember how this is sort of making that weird, sound, because the air is passing through this hole because you're not using your palms? Well, here, the air is being jutted out because you're closing the air and it's exploding. So I actually think, I don't know the physics of this, but I think on that correct clap, the palm in palm clap, I think you're getting both skin contact and air explosion. You're making your clap count. You are getting your clap's worth. So, folks, that's today's lesson for you. People say, Jim, can you talk about how to clap correctly for an hour? Well, I look at my clock, and yes, I can. Give me a topic. I can give you an hour on anything. But notice now how you clap. And as when you go to an area, when you go to an event, or if you're watching television, I guarantee you, you're going to see this. And you're going to go, oh my God, that's exactly what Jim was talking about. You're going to see people, and it looks so wrong, and it's a wimpy clap. Clapping, the whole idea is we want to show someone, we want to convey our approval in the biggest, most exciting way. And so this is the sound that you want to convey. Listen to that. If you're in the audience, I act on the stage. If I heard somebody clapping like that, I'm digging that person, not this. What is that? Like, what? Are you clapping? I can't hear you. Wow. Now there's a clapper. Hey, and just think. When you do it that way, I guarantee you all your lamps are going to turn on and off. If you do the wimpy one and you have the clapper, you might be clapping for hours. Your lamps are going to stay on. But all I know is if you do the palm on palm, lights on, lights off. One clap. Thank you very much. So, today's lesson is how to clap. Do not do the slap clap or the praying hands clap. Wimpy. Do not do the uneven clap. Getting there, but still wimpy. The arm over the head clap, Save that for a concert. You are most dependable, you're most effective, and your most classic hand clap is the palm on palm, assertive, powerful, exciting, and reverberating clap. That's the clap you want, folks. And the best part is, you can do this at home. You can train yourself. And you, too, can get the clap. I mean the correct clap. Not that other clap. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com for your podcasting pleasure. Thank you for coming here on a regular basis, for downloading, for clicking, for scrolling, whatever it is that you do to find us. Your loyalty is much appreciated. I'm Elton Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This has been Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen. Told you it sounds good.